Well, good morning, each one. Greet you in the name of Jesus. Jesus had a lot to say about finances in the New Testament, didn't he? Welcome to this seminar. Maybe just a few things before I dig into my topic. First of all, the verse in Psalms that Brother Melvin was quoting. And now let me see if I can find it. 36, Psalm 78, 36. Applies to scammers too. Nevertheless, they did flatter him with their mouth, and they lied unto him with their tongue. That really describes scammers very well. I suggest, Melvin and Sheila, that you try hard to zero in on an exact date for that second hay wagon event. We'd like to announce that to this group here. And then instead of watching with binoculars, go ahead and video it. I believe you could sell the videos for more than the stuff you're giving away. So. Quick story. We heard a lot of interesting things about old people. Well, my wife and I are old, according to our children. We're 66. Some of you that would call that young. But we recently got stuck on an elevator. And it wasn't a good experience. Roger Weavers and us were traveling into Missouri and Illinois to work on state committees there for Fraud Aware. Went into a motel after an event. It was late at night. And Roger goes right into the front desk, starts doing the check-in, getting the room keys. And I'm like, okay, let's get the luggage. And I throw all the luggage on one luggage cart, go into the foyer, and, you know, we are fishing. About the time I got in there with that, he has the room keys. Hey, here's your key. Here's yours. Oh, we're in different floors. Oh, I got this luggage all on the same cart. And, well, Alta said, why don't we just get our luggage off, go up to our room, go up. And so, yeah, good idea. We on the elevator, 114 at 1, and nothing happened. The elevator wouldn't move. It would do nothing. And then, I forget who it was. Let's say it was me. Thought of it. We're on floor one. We don't need an elevator. Our room was just 20 feet away from the elevator. Oh, now what? So how do we get off this thing? The doors are closed. Oh, open door. There's Robert, Roger, and Julie. Trying to figure out what we're doing. Elevator story. Don't get stuck in elevators. Not a good idea. Before I get started, I want to quickly announce on handouts. For you that are note takers and you want, this handout is on our literature table. It's every slide that's in the presentation. There's another handout right beside it on the literature table. It's a one-page handout, and it has what I think are the most important, I call it the top 10 tips from the Golden Age Seminar. Front is some contact information, but on the back, if you forget everything I said today and you don't have any of the literature I have, hang on to these six slides. Six. I can even count to six. Wow. Six slides are probably the most important tools that you can get out of the seminar. So both of these are in the literature table. At the top of the steps, we have our literature that I'm going to refer to today as close to the top of the steps as we can. Of course, all the other literature is on the other table. All right, with that, let's go ahead and get started. Thanks for the invite, and we appreciate this opportunity to share and to learn together. So, Fraud Aware wants you to be aware of fraud prevention tools that will save money, improve stewardship, and preserve testimony. A very important tool in preventing fraud is simply being aware. I'm going to divide my talk into four parts. We're going to do an introduction quickly. We're going to touch on illegal money pulls. We're going to go into the scams and more scams. And then we're going to close with some tools, some resources. And the Q&A likely will need to be after lunch. I'm going to share five words that would save $1 million tomorrow. Anybody remember that from last year? What's the five words? Surely somebody can remember the five words from last year. Stop. Pardon?
Stop.
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 Stop, yeah, stop, drop, and roll your thinking, like stop, disconnect, reconsider. We'll get to them five words a little later in the talk. Could somebody get me a bottle of water, please? Thanks. I'm going to share two happenings just in the last 4 days that we've been made aware of. Over $1 million in two happenings. All right, moving on. So FraudAware was formed in 2021 by a group of concerned Amish and Mennonite brethren, and the board members in FraudAware that were part of the founding of FraudAware observed firsthand the consequences of failed, illegal money pools and other frauds. An illegal money pool is what we define as an operator who accepts or solicits money from investors and then loans it out to borrowers. Many of us had served on church committees for failed money pools that were illegal. We were working in the trenches. We heard the victim stories and we felt their pain. We witnessed the damage to our testimony. My experience personally was with the Philip Real situation. It was a loan pool that crashed. I visited Philip for around 5 years in federal prisons. He gives me free rein to use his name at any time. And he now says, I should have heeded the counsel of my brethren. And those words are the words of experience. He goes on to support the work of FraudAware. And he says, I hope that your efforts can just prevent at least one person from going down the path that I went down. Leadership is a 7-member operating board here in Pennsylvania. There's 23 advisory board members in a number of states. There's 13 Indiana and Ohio state committee members, and we're in the early stages of starting a Missouri and an Illinois FraudAware state committee. We're also hoping to develop or put in place some community contact persons in other areas where we don't have a strong presence, but we just need somebody to reach out to, somebody to store a little bit of literature in their community for local community events. Our goal is to keep connecting with the Plain communities as much as possible, share the resources, it's no use we all reinvent the wheel in our own little corner of the world. So pray for us as we try to put together a structure and then hold it together with all the various Plain communities. We're a 501c3 nonprofit organization dependent strictly on your donations to help fund our expenses. And I just want to say thank you for your support. It is very encouraging when we see the financial needs being met. The FraudAware Operating Board, of which I'm a part of, is accountable to the Advisory Board. So in part, the Advisory Board has the authority to remove or add board members to the Operating Board. A couple of things that FraudAware is not. We are not investment advisors. We're not an investment organization. You can't give your money and we'll invest it for you. Neither will we give you advice and say, this loan pool and this outfit and so on, they're good. This is high risk. We don't do that by name. We give you red flags and green flags. We're also not an authority. We're not out there searching or trying to apprehend perpetrators. We're not an ambulance for the fraud victims. And we, of course, are not legal counsel. We're not CPA accountants. Professional services like accountants and attorneys and those kind of things are very, very expensive. Not using them can cost you a lot more. We're a conservative Anabaptist resource for fraud identification, education, and prevention. Our primary responsibility is to help you all identify fraud so that you're aware and then you can help educate others. Share the information that we have available with your families, your communities, whatever that might be. If we can work together as communities, we can help prevent fraud in our communities. So what do? We do literature, trifolds, booklets, newsletters, printed copies. Most of the information is on our website as well, fraudaware.us. I mentioned the items that I'm going to refer to in the talk or on the table. We have a lot more literature on both tables as well. Please visit the literature table. We have published a number of books. The widow who got scammed and the village that burned $3 million, and now the most recent one, I almost fell for it. They are all three available through Christian Light Publications. Christian Light is our book distributor. They also are available in a number of bookstores. And at events like this, we have an agreement where because of donor-sponsored promotional copies, we are offering all three of these books here today for no charge, and we do that at other events as well. Listen, library, never in our wildest dreams did we think we would have as much traction as we do with that. It's available by telephone or on our website. In 2025, we had almost 18,000 calls and over 8,000 hours of listen time. You can listen to educational stories that are helpful in recognizing how when you might be getting scammed. We do events, presentations, we get to expos. We, of course, can't cover all presentation, and we're hoping, we're trying, we're working on a curriculum or a packet. We're not sure what it's going to look like, but for now, we're calling it Teach a Teacher. So somebody's going to do a church topic or a safety committee meeting or whatever topic at an event. So we'll have information, literature, maybe a curriculum type thing that will be helpful to them, hopefully. Our website, as I mentioned, fraudaware.us, almost all of our information is on that website. Our theme verse, how is it that I hear this of thee, give an account of thy stewardship? And that's in Luke 16, 2. All right, let's go over into the illegal money pools. In the past 20 years, $300 million has been lost. Tens of thousands of man-hours have been served in trying to resolve things, money pool crashes that could not be resolved. And that's where many of us got the burden to start Fraud Aware. Ministry, committees of those man-hours. And wouldn't that have been so much better to invest those man-hours into kingdom work, into humanitarian aid? But we're sitting there night after night trying to resolve questions that had no good answers. Government agencies, and that's our taxpayer dollars. Some of the tax money that we give to the government is being used, and large amounts of it has been used to investigate and prosecute and put in prison our own people. And the $300 million, we were talking about that a couple of weeks ago. That was an extremely conservative number. We are positive it's well over $500,000. My personal opinion, I have nothing to back this up. My personal opinion is we've lost $1 billion in the last 20 years. That I may be totally wrong. Doesn't matter what the number is. We need to work at it. Another reason for starting Fraud Aware was an attorney had been invited to speak at a local Anabaptist meeting about this subject. This attorney said, he declined. He said, thanks for your offer, but I will have to decline. I support your efforts, but this message must come from within. If I come and speak to your people, that's not going to be as effective. And he said, these loan pools are going to continue unless we educate our people. And again, the message must come from within. That was a turning point. That to a number of us, like, wow, he is refusing to speak at our meeting on a subject that he had a passion for. It pushed us in this direction. Illegal loan pools, you could identify them as unregistered with the Securities and Exchange Commission, which is often referred to as SEC, and loans and or investments that exceed limits set by state or federal authorities. We don't have time to get in that. I don't have that book up here. I think we have some on the literature table. We go into a lot of detail on where the lines are between legal and illegal. This is just a quick snapshot. If you look at this slide on the green, that's illegal. You have a lender and a borrower. It could be father, son, could be cousin to whatever. It doesn't matter. That is legal. We highly encourage doing proper paperwork and having it well documented. That's fine. Illegal is when you have investors putting money into an investment pool. There's a middleman there operating that investment pool. And then there's a borrower, or the middleman is investing somewhere. And that's a good example of where it crosses the line into being illegal. The characteristics of an illegal money pool is oftentimes some of these points. Easy borrowing, little paperwork. One of the situations that we became aware of was a man called a loan pool operator and said, "I heard that you loan out money." And the first question was, "Yes, how much do you need?" It was $250,000. "Oh, I can write you a check now." And didn't ask a single question of where the money was going. I'll touch on that a little later. Little due diligence, and that's what I just described. How much do you need? And I'll write the check now. Secular settings, often this type of lending is at high interest rates, loan sharks, and conservative settings, oftentimes more competitive interest rates. So why would we invest in these illegal money pools? Well, there's this affinity fraud factor. We trust them because they're one of us. They might speak our language. They might go to a conservative church. Or why would we invest? Are we attracted to higher than average interest rates? Are we risk takers? Is the first question we consider or ask what they paying for an investment? How much? That, my friends, is not the most important question, and it should not be the most important. It should not be the first question or the most important question. We'll touch on that a little later. Are we desperate? Are we careless? Okay, all investments have risk. There's nothing on planet Earth that is risk-free. I'm sure you're all aware of that. How can we identify the higher risks and the lower risks? Let's look at some red flags. If it's not legally structured, not registered with the SEC, if there's no financial statements that come automatically from a third-party, unaffiliated CPA group, if it's just a one-man person, a one-person operator, not accountable to anyone, or maybe a little bit of a board or something like that, but basically, I'm so sorry to use this phrase, but a puppet show. We need a board of directors that is making all the major decisions. My friends, in the multitude of counselors, there's safety. This is the one point that we need to remind ourselves again and again and again. And then above market rates. Higher rates almost always means higher risk. Green flags, positive signs, reduced risks. So if it's legally structured, if it's audited financial statements that come automatically from a third-party CPA, there's an oversight board. And like I said, they're a legitimate board of directors. They make all the decisions. And then more average on the market rates. Let's look at risk. So legal and less. This is an example of legal and less risk. So we have the government in the top left there. They're giving a license, a green arrow, to the board and investment pool. So we got a board there operating this pool. They're in turn required to give audits back to the government. And then we have the investors down in the lower left there. Green arrow says the investors are giving money up to the board of directors, the investment pool. And then in turn, they got audits coming to them that also are required to give to all the investors. Bottom right is the borrower, or a place where you're investing the money. They're giving a loan, and the borrower's responsibility is financial records, prompt payments, and honesty. This is an example of a lower risk and a legally structured pool. Can you identify any red flags with this ad? Go ahead. Anybody?
14%
interest. 14% interest. Wow. I just took a call a few weeks ago from, I believe it might have been Kentucky, but I'm not sure, and it doesn't matter. The man was calling on behalf of a situation that was a loan pool, and he was trying to figure out if this is a good loan pool. And he said, they're paying 3.5%. And I'm, oh, that's pretty average. And he said, if they don't like that 3.5%, they also have a second option that pays 5%. Okay. A little higher risk, he said. And they were marketing it that way. You can choose higher risk at 5% and lower risk at 3.5%. So I was waiting for, you know, okay, so what's the question here? That's pretty average. And then I learned that that was per month. 3.5% per month. That's like, do the math, somebody, quick. And the 5% at 12 months, that's 60% interest. Really? I'm sorry, that is extremely high risk. Ponzi schemes, as many of you know, when new investments are used to pay the previous investors. And talking to somebody at one of the meals, you know, most of these men never set out from day one to defraud people. But they get into a difficult situation, things aren't flowing real well, and they start acting like the drowning man. They grab a hold of anything and everything they can to keep from going down. And one of those things is soliciting new investments because they got to pay the previous investors, and that's when it is a Ponzi scheme. When you serve on a church committee, like many of us did for financial crisis, the hardship stories from the victims are, I'm not sure what word to use, elderly, widowers, losing everything they have, children buying their groceries, paying their funeral expenses, young couple maybe saving for a house, major health events that can't be paid. It's one thing to hear those stories. It's quite a different thing to be on a church committee and receive those letters and take those phone calls from church brothers and sisters who have invested their life savings, begging for funds to fill the heating oil tank in 2 weeks. They're going to be out of oil. Or begging for funds that they had saved up to do a surgery, and they much need the surgery, and it's gone. Best practices in prevention, there's one rule that we must keep in mind. Do not ever think of putting all your eggs in one basket. Diversification is so critical. Now, I will say, if you've chosen investment that's very low risk, it has a very legitimate board of directors and all those green flags we hit, your risk probably isn't quite as high, but it's still a wise thing to keep your investments, your savings accounts that you're going to need for the end of life when you can't work anymore. You're going to need that. Put it in more than one place. The investment sheep test that comes out of this village had burned $3 million. If you would feel sheepish discussing the investment with your fellow church members, you probably should avoid it. Find a money matters partner. It doesn't matter if we're old or young. Maybe older folks like us should consider a younger person. Younger folks might consider an older person, or it might be your friend, your relative, your accountant, whoever it is, banker. In the multitude of counselors, there is safety. Those couple of words go so far in not just this, but in many areas of our lives. I just mentioned this book. If you want to learn more about illegal money pools, this is an excellent book, The Village That Burned $3 Million. It's about, you can think about, read about Money Man Ed and Investor Ivan and Widow Naomi, how they burned $3 million. All right, let's talk about scams. Makes me a little nervous hitting this subject. I'm not the technology expert. But what I do know is I've heard a lot of stories. And some days, it feels to us that are in the trenches a little bit like the man that was walking down the seashore and he threw a starfish in the ocean, and a guy came along and said, what are you doing? I mean, this is thousands of starfish. And he didn't say a single word. He picked it up and tossed it in the ocean. He said, it made a difference for that one. And that's how we feel. We are never going to get scams and frauds. All we can hope for is to reduce them. We cannot eliminate them on this planet.
Let's move into scams. There's phone scams, gift card scams, and there's grandchild scams. There's money-wearing scams, email scams, fake check scams. The list goes on and on and on. And I think there's a new one almost every week. It's a big business. Many scammers have well-equipped call centers. Look at the pictures in this slide of the cubicles, how small they are. And that picture, I don't know, that's at least 50 cubicles, might be close to 100. This is very commonly where the calls are coming from or the communication is coming from. Not always. There's some one-man shows, but call centers, and especially in other countries, some in this country, some have paid employees, and others, unfortunately, have slaves. There's people human trafficked into working. They think they're going to a high-paying job. It's common in some of those countries' settings to travel to earn money. They get on a bus, they're offered a lucrative wage, this is going to be great, and they get inside a compound, they never see the light of day. I'm going to use the same verse that I think Melvin used, and I just say, does this topic bring fear to your mind? For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power, and of love, and of sound mind. We do not want you to be fearful. We want to share awareness along with tools that you can use to prevent or reduce these scams and frauds. We encourage you to embrace faith over fear. Our God has an almighty power. It's through Him we can do all things. Stand on the promises of God. Greater is He that is in you than he that is in the world. Let's take a quick peek inside a scammer's toolbox. Scammers have a lot of tools that they use. One of them is information. Another is technology. And another is psychology. Most of the tools that they use fall in one of these three categories. Let's dig a little deeper. So information before calling you is often the case. They might have your full name, your address, your social security number, your credit card number, your bank accounts, login credentials, and much more. They might know about events like a jury duty, an estate settlement, prison release. Can you believe there was a scam? Somebody got a false notice that he was going to, or no, family got a notice that dad's coming out of prison and we're going to need some money to get the Wi-Fi connected for the, what do they call that, parole officer or whatever? And anyway, prison release, spouse's death, and much more. All these things that they have, the information they have, makes them feel authentic and real, and it can easily cause fear. Information is a huge tool that they use. Technology might be through harmful links by email or text. Auto dialers and caller ID spoofing. Autodialers, they just have robots that call zillions of numbers at one time, and they got, when you get a call and nobody talks, it's because nobody in the call center is ready to grab that call immediately, so there might be a little delay. Caller ID spoofing, there's a question in the question box that we'll cover, but it's very easy for them to make any name or any number show up on the caller ID. They can do it from their easy chair in India. It's simple. Don't depend on caller ID. Don't trust it. It can be a tool, but they can easily spoof it. They might have fake websites, chat bots, or apps. Some of these fake websites are amazing. They will put up a website that looks like a really professional website. They can do deep fake videos or images, pictures of things that don't exist. Voice cloning. They don't need very much of your voice at all to make a digital voice that sounds like you. Someone without my permission, but I didn't really care, cloned my voice from a topic I did and applied it to one of the stories on our Fall Listen Library. I think it's the counterfeit stamps. If you listen to that one, it sounds like me. Somebody cloned my voice and just for a test. Okay, moving into psychology. This is maybe the biggest one that they understand and use and have learned. They know how to manipulate your emotions. They're good at it. It's what they do. It's their job. They control your mind. They keep you busy so you can't think. They use fear, intimidation, urgency, right now, and you may not talk to anyone. They pretend to care. I'm going to touch that in a minute or two. Unbelievable how many of these scammers take the patient caring approach. Something really bad happened in your life. Do you know about this or this? Oh, no. Well, we're going to help you. We're the good guys, and we're going to help overcome the bad guys. In reality, they are scamming us in the process. Greed, excitement, easy money, that's the U1 Biggs, is used a lot as well. All right, let's dig into a couple of victim stories. We'll do a quick spin. So fake service scams is the first one I'm going to touch on. It's when you pay for a service that never happens. It could be a home repair, blacktop sealer, that's just black water. Or it might be tech support, fixing a virus on your computer or phone that doesn't even exist. It could be a medical service where you pay for a test that never happened. This story is back on the table right at the top of the steps. $6 million lost. Mailing hair samples, ads in many plain publications for testing. The hair was discarded. A bogus report was sent, and the money was put in the bank. The authorities sent in a Barbie doll hair as part of their investigation. Sure enough, they got a report back pretty soon. Barbie was actually allergic to certain foods and certain items. $6 million was lost. 88,000 people were scammed. And many of them likely avoided certain foods based on their bogus allergies. This man, of course, is getting free room and board. He's in prison. Took a long time. The story is amazing. And as a side note, he's currently being investigated in Canada for running a bogus prenatal paternity test. Scam or business. All right, 6-week FBI impersonator scam. They traumatized this family for 6 long weeks. Common tactics that they used were fear, intimidation, and pretending to care, which builds false trust. I really care about you, and in the same time, he's scamming you. This particular FBI impersonator scam first was by UPS, sending cash, then cash in person, and then cash into Bitcoin machines. More than $130,000 was lost. The story's back on our table. It's an amazing story. I happened to take this call myself a couple of months ago. The Fowler-in-law is the one that reached out to Fraud Aware. It started with a criminal pretending to be FBI agent Ross. He claimed that Mark's identity had been stolen and he would help him prove his innocence. The FBI agent Ross was pretending to be very concerned, and here's where the part about really caring. He said things like, "Be sure to eat your meals on time, Mark. Are you taking care of yourself? This is quite a journey. Drink plenty of water." He even said, "By the grace of God, we're going to help you through this." And at the same time, while he was doing all this, he was scamming more than $130,000. All his money was being kept in the U.S. Treasury, which I guess is a safe place. I don't know. And it was going to be returned by a cashier's check after his hearing. Mark drained all his personal bank accounts, and then he made draws against a loan that he had for a building project. During this phone call, the father-in-law choked up several times, couldn't talk. And there was tears rolling down my face till I was done listening to that story. Young couple, losing weight, 6 weeks. The community could tell something was wrong. But he was so fearful, the scammer had him so traumatized that you cannot tell anyone. He even tried to suggests that it could be his father-in-law that stole his identity. And yeah, bogus, $130,000. Grandchild scams. Our latest newsletter, back on the table. This story is on the front page of our latest newsletter. Benyel called Grandma and said, "Grandma, my taxi driver was arrested and they threw me in jail along with him. And I'm going to need $5,000 to get out of jail." Grandma was suspicious. She was a sharp widow. And as a test, she talked Dutch to Benyel. And Benyel said, "No, Grandma, you need to talk English so my attorney can understand." 2 weeks after sending the $5,000 in a UPS or a FedEx envelope, Grandma just couldn't stand it any longer and wanted to know how Benyel's making out, so she called him. And she said, "Benyel, how are you?" It's like Benyel's thinking, "Boy, this is weird. Grandma usually doesn't call me and just out of the blue and say, 'How are you?'" "So, I'm okay." And Grandma said, "Did you get out of jail?" And he's like, "Jail, Grandma? I wasn't in jail." So yeah, this widowed grandma sent $5,000 by FedEx. A very common tactic. Grandchild or family member or whatever, they'll create a story. And they can clone your voices and they can make it sound like them. These are the little scams that I've talked about so far. Only about 10,000, 20,000, some of them 30,000. The money wire scams is the big bucks. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars. It blows my mind. They hack into emails and they watch looking for plans to wire money. I'm only guessing, I'm not a technology expert, but I would guess they use AI to search for certain words in emails they've hacked. When the timing is right, they jump in there, they send a real email right from the guy's email account. They get inside emails nowadays. They used to mostly create new email addresses that was only one digit different, so you didn't notice, and they still do that too. Victims unknowingly wire money to scammers and it is gone. Two young businessmen bought a business importing product and the email got hacked in the other country. I'll just say China, I forget where it was. And they wired a couple of $100,000, I can't remember the amount, 100 or two I'm gonna say, to a scammer because a scammer hacked into their vendor's email account and said, "Here's the banking information, go ahead and send it." Another situation a couple months ago, three church leaders were communicating about a large alms fund need and they were going to be transferring some money and a scammer was watching their email dialogue. And when the one was traveling, it's amazing what they knew, but he jumped in his email. He knew he wouldn't see his email till that night and the church leaders wired well over $100,000 of church funds to scammers. Young couple, real recent, I got a call from a Fowler, said, "My daughter and your son-in-law, is buying a house, moving to a church outreach, and over $250,000, I'll just say. Somebody jumped in there and they wired the money to a scammer. So here's a young couple, they don't have a house, and they have a debt of $250,000+. And we're gonna get into some tools here on the money wire scams in a minute. Gift card scams, scammers create stories with reasons of why large amounts of money is owed. The victims are instructed to buy gift cards, read the gift card numbers to the scammer, which is then credited to the scammers. Within 1 month of each other, two Mennonite ladies scammed over $100,000. They wrote their stories, and it's back on our literature table near the top of the steps. Amazing two stories on gift card scams. Both of them drug out for several weeks, and one of these ladies said it was the most horrible experience of her entire life. These scammers put their victims under intense emotional stress. The U1 big scams, I'm really concerned about this one. It's when you won a grand prize in a drawing, Or maybe it was a sweepstakes, maybe Clearinghouse Publishers. Maybe it's inheritance from an uncle that you didn't know from Timbuktu or whatever. But first, you need to pay the taxes or the fees or the customs. And I can assure you, they will continue to give you reasons of why you need to pay another $10,000 or another $50,000. They will keep on coming up with reasons until you quit paying. They will never run out of reasons. They will always fabricate new stories, new reasons. These victims are sometimes draining their own personal bank accounts, and they're maxing out multiple credit cards. They're making loans from relatives. They're mortgaging real estate. From 5 phone calls that Fraud Aware took, over $2 million has been lost of paying these fees in advance. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And just Friday, I got an email. I can't remember which was when, but in the last 4 days, I was made aware of 2 different U1 bigs, one a lot of money, and the total of the two is another $1 million. So I can now say out of 7 phone calls, there's $3 million. So we could go on till midnight telling stories. It is just unreal how much we hear and how much we're losing. But I'd like to spend the remaining couple of minutes here with switching to the positives. Let's talk about the tools. Let's keep these tools in our minds or keep them handy so that when we might be under pressure, we have them available to us. Let's look at things that are honest and true and of good report, like in Philippians 4:8. We're going to look at some tools. So the first one is stop, disconnect, and reconsider. And that's probably what you were thinking on the stop. So stop if you're feeling uncertain, surprised, or fearful. Just stop and disconnect. Disconnect by hanging up the phone, powering down the device, walking away from the situation, or disconnect emotionally from the urgency and the panic. You gotta stop and disconnect. When they get you, they will not let you go until they got some of your money. And you just gotta stop and disconnect. And then reconsider, seek counsel, get a second opinion, get some advice. Slow down. Give yourself some time to stop, disconnect, and reconsider. This next slide is 2 things that you can use to identify scammers. If somebody says you must stay on the phone with them, you can't hang up, or you may not talk to anyone about this phone call or this situation or whatever, just hang up. It's a scammer. Those 2 things, without exception, are scammers, and you need to stop, disconnect, and reconsider. I know most of us come from an era of time where hanging up the phone was rude, right? You don't hang up on somebody. I'm here to say we need to change course. It is perfectly fine to hang up if you have any signs that it's a scammer. If you're uncomfortable with hanging up a phone, you need to practice. Get your spouse to call you and then hang up the phone. Practice, you know. And if you don't want to use a spouse, you can just pretend the phone rang and put it down. All right, enough of that. So here's a tool, and it's inside our latest book, I Almost Fell For It. If you open the front cover, there's a message from the board, and right in the middle of that page is a bold sentence. It's on the slide here. A simple escape route, as you will see in the following stories, is simply ask advice. 3 words. And who are we going to ask advice from? Trusted people we know. Not acting on the demands of somebody that you don't know. Somebody's on the other side. Again and again and again, in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. The next three tools are going to be for situations where you were tricked. You believed the guy when he said he's the FBI, or he said I'm the sheriff, or whatever, and he tricked you. And sure enough, you're thinking, yeah, well, this is the FBI, I guess. And then they also tricked you in believing the story. Scams have three parts. It's a faker pretending to be somebody he is not. Number two comes the story. And then number three is the payment. These next tools are for the payment. You've been tricked. You believed him and you believed the story. Now we're going to look at payment methods because that's the goal for the scammers. They want to get paid. Hang up on gift card scams. What's the five words for hanging up on gift cards, of not getting scammed by gift cards? Gift cards are for gifts. Five words. Those five words would save us $1 million tomorrow. This country is losing more than $1 million per day of people going out and buying gift cards and reading the number off to a scammer. We did it today. We're doing it today. Tomorrow we're going to do it again. Another $1 million. That's a very conservative number from the data that Federal Trade Commission has. What do? Gift cards are for gifts. It's those five words. And we have bookmarkers that say that, and I don't see, I thought I had everything here. But anyway, there's big gift cards, bookmarkers back there that say gift cards are for gifts. So you're welcome to grab a handful and share them around. Here's the big bucks again. When you're wiring money or you're sending money electronically, do not use email. Always use a second method to verify the information. So it's okay to use email, but not as the only source. Confirm the bank name and the routing number. You can look up the routing number and see where this bank is. Is it in Lancaster County or India? And then you verbally clarify the account number by a second method of communication that you know and trust. The best thing to do is get a phone number that you know and trust and call the entity, the bank, the business, whatever it is. Millions and millions of dollars have been lost because of not confirming the bank name, routing number, and account number verbally. When you're onboarding new vendors, new pays, or changing payment instructions, that's a place where they're really watching. And depends on the circumstances, you can do what they call the penny test, where you just send like $2.69, and then you have them call, double check, and say, well, how much hit your account? And then you know it's in the right account. The big question is, so in all scams, is it really who you think it is? And then with the money, is it really going where you think it's going? Those are two critical questions to ask. So, and then cash. Do not use large amounts of cash. You pick your own number. I'm going to throw $500 out there. Never send more than $500 by cash, FedEx, or mail. Never insert cash into an ATM or a Bitcoin machine. Friends of ours got scammed for $12,000. The story is back on our table. I didn't have that one here, but they've been around the block. They knew how scammers work. They were never going to get scammed. At the end of the day, the wife got $12,000 cash, drove to some distant town, a Mennonite lady putting hundreds of dollar bills, I mean, well, $12,000, whatever that is, into a Bitcoin locker. And she didn't think very much of Bitcoin to the point she said, yeah, my grandson used to dabble in Bitcoin before he was saved. So that tells you how much she thought about Bitcoin, and she was actually fed $12,000. So on our literature table, I have some of these green cards. It summarizes the three questions that the three tools that I just talked about. There's three tools on the green card I just covered. Those tools, excuse me, those tools are very important. If you've been tricked, grab the green card. All right, in closing, how can you help? You can support the work financially or in prayer. You can share the resources we have with your friends, your family, your church. I mentioned the newsletters. We're happy to put a bulk quantity in if you want to have 50 or whatever number you pick to send to your church or sent to a deacon, and then he distributes them in the mailboxes. Or individuals are fine as well. We have it by email or print. It might not surprise you that this new book was printed. It was not printed to store in a warehouse. We would really like to get as many of these books into as many homes as possible. 12 good stories that have the teaching event built into them. Grab a handful, share them. There's bulk shrink wrap packs of, I believe, 27 per pack. If you have a family event or a local community event or whatever, please take them along. I have 4 more cases out in the van, and I would be delighted to give them all away today or this weekend. They would just be a lot better going home in your car than mine. Please stop by our literature table. In closing, Fraud Aware's mission, as I told you, is to be a conservative Anabaptist resource for fraud identification and education and prevention. But beyond that mission, we have a vision. We have a vision of a day when our people will not need to lose $300 million in just a decade or two. And we have a vision of a day when our children and our grandchildren will not need to serve prison sentences for yet another crashed conservative Anabaptist loan pool. And we invite you to join that vision. We want you to be aware of fraud prevention tools that will save money, improve stewardship, and preserve testimony. And we would invite your feedback. If anyone has any ideas of how we could take some of the things that we learned and some of the tools that are available and package them in a way to reach more people and in a way to have them handy. Some days I dream of putting some of these tools in a little booklet. I don't know what we'll do, but please use the tools we share today and join us in sharing in your community. I was going to do questions now, but we're out of time, so I will turn it back over to Marv to take it from here.